This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Paling kerap sekali saya ditahan adalah waktu kita lawan. Kita lawan bermula lepas Anwar Ibrahim di penjara. Jadi waktu tu kumpulan pelakulah anak muda ambil peluang kerana orang tengah marah. Jadi kami rasa tak guna orang marah tapi tak buat satu aksi untuk lawan kerajaan. Kerana kita lawan waktu itu berlangsung lama dalam 2 bulan. Setiap hari Sabtu akan ada demonstrasi di Sogo. Waktu itu kami ada satu prinsip. Kalau kerajaan tak suka apa kita buat, dan semakin keras dia lawan kita, maksudnya kita sedang buat perkara yang betul. Jadi kalau waktu itu kami ditangkap dan sebagainya, maksudnya kami sedang buat perkara yang betul. So kalau kita buat perkara betul, kita tak boleh berhenti. Itu dalam dan ia bagi semangat dekat kawan-kawan lain.
Good afternoon, this is Live and Learn on The Bigger Picture and I'm Juliet Jacobs. Since early June, the team behind the Freedom Film Fest have been releasing a specially curated Freedom Film playlist every weekend, which they've dubbed Weekend Watch with Freedom Film Fest, and this is happening on their YouTube channel. So each thematic playlist has allowed us to revisit some of the many films produced for the film festival, and it's also a good chance to remind ourselves about the many human rights issues that have been brought to the fore thanks to these thought-provoking films. So this weekend, the playlist is themed People's Movement for Change and will feature 3 films, Melawan Arus by Arul Prakash, Kayuh by Soh Suk Hwa, and When Lawyers Walk by Mian Li. And on the show today, I will be speaking to both Prakash and Suk Hwa about their respective films. But first up, I have Prakash joining me, and his film Melawan Arus was released back in 2018 and explores what it took to create that 2018 political tsunami. Welcome, Prakash. How are you today?
Yeah, I'm good. Thanks for the opportunity.
No, absolute pleasure. Thank you so much for joining me. So I guess, you know, let's just get to the basics first. Can you describe what Melawan Arus is all about for those who haven't had the privilege to catch it yet?
Yeah, sure. Melawan Arus actually traces the undercurrents beneath the waves that swept away the 61 years rule of Barisan National Government in Malaysia. Actually, it's part of continuous documentation to show the people, the riot, the reason and contribution behind the change we saw on the 9th May general election.
Okay, all right. And, you know, when you wanted to make this film, right, what did you want to discuss? You know, what were you thinking about? What were your aims when you made this film?
Okay, there was a lot of like a populist narrative. After the May 9th general elections, I wanted to counter that because I want to show what was the reality before this GE and even the struggle of the civil society, people's movement over decades before we see this change. So this popular narrative kind of showing the people through social media, through press conferences, that PH politicians and Mahathir is the reason behind this change. I don't believe it. And I totally disagree. And the change and the victory is by the people, but not by the politician or political party per se. It's people who bring about the change. It's the movement, NGO, civil society who were part of the change, the struggle, even before the independence, tried through over decades to see Malaysia for all. Of course, there were a lot of dissatisfaction on 1MDB scandal, corruption allegations, misuse of power and racism, inequality under Najib and his administration. And he did not do anything and like call for reform or like free and fair elections or good governance by Berse and many other activists and NGOs was silence. The dissent was silence. People's voice was not heard. Yep.
All right. So I guess you wanted to sort of like challenge the populist narratives, Salah, that we had all these quote unquote heroes who had.
Yep.
But to be fair, you know, you spoke to many different people for this film. Some of them were also politicians. Some of them were MPs. Not all of them. Who did you speak to? I mean, just maybe you can briefly tell for those who haven't watched it, who are some of the people that you approached? And maybe you can tell me why you chose to feature them.
I think the only MP during that moment was Maria Chin Abdullah. She was from the activist civil society background. So the interview is mostly about her activism, her struggle, even during the late 70s and 80s, not just focusing on why she came into politics or like contested in PG. And of course, another politician, I mean, like from the Socialist Party of Malaysia is Dr. Kumar. Other than that, it's all activists, graphic artists, and many others like Fahmi Reza, Ishamuddin Rais, Tija, and many others who contributed for this change. I did even extra interviews. I didn't have much time to put all together. This is also because my own experience as activist and filmmaker on the streets during like 98 Reformasi, seen a lot of grassroots communist struggles over the past 20 years, especially under the Mahathir rule. A lot of activists been detained, tortured and arrested for voicing out and fighting for human rights and injustices. I don't want these stories be like disappeared or like I want to document and also to show the younger generation and Malaysian at large to understand these struggles in the past.
Okay, all right. So you wanted, a clear depiction of what actually happened, right? Because, I mean, the younger generation coming to this might not actually know what happened in 98 or, you know, don't quite know the details of everything, the Reformasi movement, all of that. It might be, yeah, they might not actually know, right? I mean,
yeah, I think that there is a huge gap in counter narrative, or like even like huge gap in the way we were communicating, or the way people's movement were fighting for human rights, or like held like a government accountable without internet during that period, without any like real photograph or like video, working with commas like I think 8 years ago for like a period of 10 years, they were the like a pioneer human rights organization were using video during that time, documenting these struggles. So there's no like Android phone, like mobile phone and technology to capture and share immediately like we have now in Facebook or like Twitter or in any social media platform or chat application. We can like broadcast things live and we can share immediately. But these memories in the past struggle, most often we need to like dig it up. Like we try to find footages from archive, from individual documentation, from old newspaper. It's not an easy work. And also it takes a lot of time to weave the story and to tell it for the current political situation and scenario. And it's a tough job. Yep.
Okay. All right. So that was what you're hoping to bridge that gap of information, right? And I know that when the film came out, and this was back in 2018, am I correct? Or was it 2018?
Yes. 2018, yep. Like the process started, during that time.
Okay. So, I mean, after election, the changing up, after the elections, right? Yeah. And so I know that when the film first premiered, right, and that there was some really intense discussion from what I've been reading that followed that initial screening of the film. What was actually discussed? What was, you know, so heated about those discussions?
I think even during that time, some of the interviews I did, I told that this PH government can be like voted out. Even before they finish their full term, but that what happened is not actually voted out. Of course, it's like a whole different scenario, Sheraton move, the backdoor government, and so on. And a lot of discussion is mainly about the PH politician, ministers, and Mahathir's role, and so on. The reform, even during that period, the promises, even from the manifesto, was not really delivered. Although they actually taken some strides in bringing some reforms, but key reforms were not delivered. They also ignored the promises especially from the manifesto. They were shutting down things, not listening to people's voices. And we often hear this popular term called U-turns on the issues. And also promises, they were actually championing during the election period. About like GST, IPCMC, and many other reforms. So not forgetting about Indigenous people land rights. During the PH governance, we had like Gua Musang Indigenous people land issues and many other issues were happening. And the activists still were being questioned by the police, were arrested, and so on. And we didn't see the solidarity like before during that short period of time.
Yes. So I know one of your interviewees is also an activist, and I think what she said in the film was very true, right? It doesn't matter whether you're opposition or government or whatever, who you are, their role, you know, the people that you interview, their role is as activists. So they're like a third arm of all of this, you know, constantly keeping those in power in check. And it's not that, and it was very awkward for some of them, right? Because a lot of the new Pakatan Harapan ministers were their friends or people they had worked with, right? And now to critique them, there were some activists who felt very uncomfortable doing that. But I think Mas is the one who said, no, friend or not, you're doing your duty as an activist to make sure those promises are fulfilled, to make sure that they deliver on the promises that they had written in their manifestos, for example.
Yeah, definitely it's like watchdog, like what's our role really? And there were huge vacuum after the Pakatan Harapan winning because some of activists like NGO workers were taken into the government playing some certain roles, being like a staff, like a civil servant and so on. And the initial impression was we could engage better than before. But again, it's a question of the system. If the system is still the same, the way the police is looking at human rights, the activists is same. And the way they are communicating is the same. And the sensitivity around 3R, so-called 3R, race, religion, and rulers were the same. And it's very hard when you delay these reforms and these changes and to question. They say, oh, let's watch and see after 1 year, after 100 days. And maybe the NGO activists or the movement were taking that position. Oh, they were new. This is 60 years old government. We can't undo in overnight the things they've done. But it's proven again, like if the things not changed, what we're supposed to change, it's really hard. And it's a power play and power grabbing we have seen for the past 2 or 3 years.
The film was, of course, as you said, made before the fall of the Pakatan Harapan government. How do you feel looking back at the film and everything that was discussed, you know, when faced with what we've been going through for this last, almost 2 years since the fall of the Pakatan Harapan government?
I think some of the PH-related issues, especially on the governance under Mahathir, again, like kind of like a second chapter, it was always discussed after the screenings. And delaying change and reform will bring more disaster. We have seen it clearly during this pandemic moment. Inefficiency of the government and the opposition dealing with COVID-19 crisis, not only COVID-19, also economical and political crisis in the country. We also clearly seeing the struggle, like the prime minister or the people want to continue to hold on to the power. And actually PN is not legitimately elected government. And it's, they are not being there from the mandate of the people. And the power and the decision have to be given back to the rakyat to decide the new government and how they can get involved in dealing with this pandemic and crisis moment. Yep.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, definitely. For anyone who's coming to this film with a fresh pair of eyes, you know, not having watched it before, what do you hope that they will take away from watching it, especially in this current climate?
I think there's a lot of experience we can learn from the past, especially to learn more about the politician, how they're thinking and who they are really deep down, especially the old politicians and the old political parties. Some of the younger audience, like in Pera and many other places, Ipoh, they were really like shocked to see some of the events and incidences in the history, especially during the Reformasi era, during the student protests, like when Anwar Ishamuddin was young in University of Malaya, and so on. And they only saw Mahathir as a savior to bring change, to save Malaysia from one MDB or like from Najib or from UMNO during that period. And again, like many other human rights violation and issues under Mahathir's past administration were repeating, or like the pattern, the style is continue. And even under PN, we can see it's getting worse. That past few days, the activists visited by the police at their doorstep. Not one or two, there are many. Like they are appearing at their home and saying that, oh, we want to verify your address, even though they have been questioned in the police station.
Yeah, visiting the police their themselves. Families.
Yes, family home, especially visiting the family home. We didn't even see this in the past for this kind of investigations.
Yeah. So I think what you're saying is some legacy issues that we're seeing and becoming even worse now. Right?
Yes, yes, definitely.
This, yeah. Okay. All right. I mean, I must say, Prakash, you know, I watched the film, of course, before interviewing you, and it was 37 minutes long. And I was like, oh, 37 minutes. But it flew by, you know, there was so much in packed into those 37 minutes, so much context, so much really a wonderful look, a really succinct look back at history. And I think bottom line is you were showing the people's struggle, the people who actually worked to get us where we got to back in 2018, and that the fact that they're still continuing it to do it now, regardless of who's in power.
Yes, definitely.
Yeah,
I'm continuing to document even after this documentary. I've interviewed like Ambiga again, Maria Chin, and I'm also hoping to interview more people at this moment before the call for next general election. I feel people are undecided. They are confused. They were taken for a ride and they were manipulated during this period, especially after the PN takeover. And at least this documentation will help to help them to decide what's next, how they want the politician to be, how they want the governance to be.
Yeah, and how they should vote in the next. Yeah, I mean, yeah. Help them decide, you know, who to vote for in the next election.
Yeah, the decision have to be made by themselves, but we can give kind of like a framing and the sentiment of also the unheard voices. So sometimes in social media, it's again the narrative is again on the algorithm and the following what they are portraying might not reflect the reality on the ground.
Mm-hmm. Okay. All right. And any last message that you'd like to leave us?
Yeah, I think participation of the riot in governance should not confine to elections only. For good governance and better Malaysia, people have to actively involve in all level of decision making through their own voice and representative. Freedom of expression, human rights should be respected. All guards, all politics based on race and religion should change and should not exist to build Malaysia for all. I think we should treat all equally, no matter whether they are citizen, non-citizen, refugees, or migrant workers. We should prove the real spirit of Bangsa Malaysia. The fight continues.
Okay. All right. Well, thank you so much for joining me today.
Hey, thank you. Thank you.
That was film director Arul Prakash telling us more about his film Melawan Arus, which will be re-released this weekend on the Freedom Film Network YouTube channel. But don't go anywhere. After this quick break, I'll be speaking to So Suk Hwa about her film, which is titled Kayuh. Keep it right here on Live and Learn, BFM 89.9.
Kita, aktivis, kita ni macam pihak ketiga tau, watchdog. Kan? Jadi, tak kira lah parti apa pun tengah in power. Kalau dia buat betul, kita support. Dia buat tak betul, kena kritik lah. Kan? Ini pun kadang-kadang saya ada juga dengar. Bukanlah kawan aktivis, tapi ada lah yang kata, oh sekarang ni dah dengan pakatan ni macam tak sure macam mana nak. Kan? Nak macam kadang-kadang kawan sendiri dia kata ataupun. Saya kata, what's the problem? Kalau dia buat tak betul, kritik je lah.
Masa tu nak lalu balai polis dia. Lepas tu dia pun semua tahan kami, tak nak bagi kami berbasikal dan semua basikal dibawa masuk ke balai polis. Alasan yang diorang bagi adalah basikal kami dah ada itu flash reflector dan dia pun bagi alasan ini cakap you pun kacau jalan raya, kereta semua lalu. Lepas tu diorang keluar saman satu basikal memang memang lucu lah. Basikal pun boleh kena saman. Saya pun kali pertama kena ni saman.
Welcome back. This is Live and Learn on the Bigger Picture. I'm Juliet Jacobs, and we are continuing our collaboration with the Freedom Film Network, who are releasing a specially curated Freedom Film playlist every weekend, dubbed Weekend Watch with Freedom Film Fest. And this is, of course, on their YouTube channel. So this week, the theme for the playlist is People's Movement for Change. And just before the break, we heard from film director and activist Arul Prakash about his film Melawan Arus, which looked at the events that led up to the 2018 political tsunami here in Malaysia. But now I have So Suk Hwa joining me, and she's joining me to discuss her 2009 film, which is titled Kayuh. And it's a first-hand account of a 100-strong contingent of cyclists who rode all the way from Alostar and Johor Bahru, respectively, to Kuala Lumpur over the span of 16 days. And this was done to raise awareness on 6 major concerns of marginalized groups in Malaysia. So we're going to find out more about that. Welcome, Suk Hwa. Thank you so much for joining me. How are you today?
Good. How are you?
I'm very well, thank you. I mean, a lot of madness around us, but, you know, much to be thankful for. So just keeping going.
Need to be always positive. I think in this pandemic, sometimes it could be very drained emotionally.
Definitely. So just count our blessings and take it from there, lah, I guess. But, you know, we want to talk about a film that you made all the way back in 2009. I think the film was released in 2009. But take me back to December 2008, Suk Hwa. So that was when the Jerit's Cycling for Change campaign was happening. And I know that you were part of that campaign as well.
Yes, I was one of the coordinator on the ground. So my role is basically a logistic fixing, where I follow. I was driving a van and follow the cyclists at the back. So whatever happened to their any technical issue of their bicycle, so we will carry the bicycle into the van, then continue the journey until we got it fixed in the next stop. It's really, I would say it was a very wonderful journey for me. It's like 16 days on the road and passing through all the small towns, villages, and the most importantly is we able to actually bring forward the people's agenda to the people, so advocate for change. So it was beautiful.
I just watched the film and it was really, gosh, I started tearing up hearing some of the stories. You know, it was very emotional, actually, but a lot of hope contained in that film as well. But remind us, you know, or for those who haven't had the opportunity to watch it, what was this all about? You know, why were these activists, you know, creating these cycling convoys? You know, what is it that they wanted?
There were 6 demands. So it's including to establishments of the minimum wage and also restore the local government election, mm-hmm. Then repeal of ISA, mm-hmm. and also stop privatization of healthcare, and of course to control the price hike that happened back in 2008. So all these six were very important actually issues among the ordinary people. So Gerard, see, this is and actually 2008, if we recall back, it was a election tsunami.
Yes,
where actually,
right.
Yeah, it was amazing. But we felt like the reform agenda should be continued. So the group decided let's start a campaign where we want to make sure all these agenda, people agendas will be broadly taught in the parliament and also by the people.
Mm-hmm. And so what actually happened was that cyclists traveled along the west coast of Peninsula Malaysia, right? And
there were 100 cyclists, so 50 were cycling from the North Police, and another 50 started their journey from Skudai. So Johor. So we met in the capital of the Malaysia. Then finally, I think at the end we sent a memorandum to the parliament, to both the government and also opposition leaders. We want to give a voice to the wireless community. I think it's all about the people issues that we should be heard.
Yeah, because I think if I'm correct, you know, a lot of the people who took part in this convoy, many of them were very young. Many of them were from marginalized communities, or facing poverty. Lots of struggles, lots of everyday struggles that often we don't even think about. As we fight for seats and politics and all of that, these bread and butter issues aren't even addressed. Am I right?
Yeah. And a lot of them are from I would say very diverse background. So quite a large number of them is actually the second generation of our activists. So they also they also part of the campaign, a part of the issue, and they want to be part of the solution. I think this is what people movement about, where we want to see a real change bottom up from the people, for the people. So if you have watched the film, then you will realize I only focus on young activists and also the youth, not a single prominent figures that can be found. Actually, they were prominent throughout the film, throughout the journey. So they were part of it, like Dr. Jayakumar and also Arichavan. They play a very important role too. But I think I decided to actually focus on ordinary people, because I think they are the one who playing a most vital role in bringing the changes. Because when we talk about people movement, it should not be like who did what. It should be the empowerment of the ordinary people who actually can stand high and also speak for themselves.
And, that's what I enjoyed so much about the film as well. There were these really young activists, right? Just speaking from the heart, talking about their own political awakenings, learning about history, it's so wonderful to hear. And also some very heartbreaking stories, right, from some of the young, there was one young girl, I forget her name now, but, telling how, she said it very cheerfully, but she was talking about how difficult her life is, basically, right? Single mom, brothers, all of them surviving.
Yeah.
And those are the stories you wanted to come out.
And actually, I think this story also is part of the real life of most of the people, ordinary people. So these are the real issue that people are facing every day. People are struggling every day, even now, and it's now the pandemic time. So the marginalized people actually are facing tremendous pressure, I would say, and it's really difficult for them. But I feel like, to coming out from that, then we have to continue to struggle. Yeah, we cannot like let other people to decide on our life. So
yeah. And you know, I had forgotten about this. You know, I remember it now that this happened, but at the time also, once it sort of gained momentum and people started knowing about it, the police got involved, didn't they? And there was
actually the police helped us a lot, I would say.
Tell me why.
Yeah, because if the police didn't play a very active role, this campaign is would be, I would say, rather low-key and also small. Because, you see, it's not a political stunt. We didn't choose an easy way to just cycling along the highway. Actually, we can do that. But we decided we wanted to actually reaching out to the people, the rural folks, to actually it's also a part of the education process. Mm-hmm. So we wanted people to actually own this reform agenda. So if the police didn't play that role, it might be only reaching a certain, I would say, certain part of the society. But the police have helped us to make this really a big one and gain a lot of support and also attention. I remember when we were, I think when the cyclists were detained in Rawang, so actually more than 1,000 people were gathering outside the police to call for the release. Mm.
Yeah, because they were being held for what, obstructing traffic and not having lights.
Yeah, and also I think Dr. Kumar actually was accused of misuse the children.
Like child
like that.
Abuse almost, right? Like
yeah, child
forcing,
abuse.
Forcing the children to participate for a political agenda, right? That's along those lines. Yeah, gosh. What madness, so much madness. But the children themselves, of course, because a lot of them were like 14 to 16 years old. And I mean, they came out and said, you know, nobody forced us. This is something we wanted to do to, you know, show what we are going through, isn't it? Mm. And speak up for the rest as well.
And actually, when the arrest happened, they were refrained from reaching out to other people, including, they separate us. They separated us, so, and try to like I would say intimidate them, put them in a very cold and dark room. it was an office setting, but I don't think it's a pleasant one. But they were very good. They were very they gained confidence and they support each other. And after they coming out, actually they want to do more. They wanted to do more, actually. So I think it's a learning process and it's also an empowerment, I would say. Mm-hmm. So people felt like their action actually have some impact. Yeah, and also, yeah, and those are all the it's an empowerment process that people gain experience and people also try to resist it from any kind of intimidation.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, I think, you know, like this weekend's playlist is all about, it's all about, you know, people speaking up, it's all about people action, you know, it's all about standing up for what you believe in, right? And I think really, you know, watching these kids, and I now it's interesting to me, of course, you said that, of course, there were other more prominent people there, but it was really quite a grassroots movement. And and they've achieved their aim of, you know, presenting those memorandums to the government and the opposition. You know, when I know that you were a first-time filmmaker, right? When you were making mm-hmm. this film, how was that whole process like for you?
Actually, I didn't have any idea to make this documentary prior to the event. So the ideas only came I think maybe the third day of the fourth day of the campaign. So another activist friend actually felt that this would be a very significant journey for all the cyclists and encouraged us to actually document, do a documentary. Okay. So because I was among the friends, maybe I had some skills. So I took up the challenge and tried to like pull things together to take some recording along the journey, and we tried to to send the proposal when the FFF called for entries. And after we got the grant, so we actually revisited the struggles and also do a lot of interviews with the cyclists and also the young activists.
Okay. And you know, when the film was released during the film festival, you know, what was the sort of reactions to it? You know, how did people take to it?
I think it touched a lot of people's heart because these are the real issues, especially when I think one of the story was about a guy, a cyclist, that actually earned a very small living.
Nasir, and, right?
Yeah, Nasir, yeah. And didn't have a fixed monthly income. So it's really touched a lot of people's heart. People would wonder, actually, can he really survive? But actually, a lot of people are struggling in such condition because they are underemployment at the rural, especially. So I think this issue touched a lot of people's heart, and also the privatization of the healthcare, the hospital. Which it become more significant now when during a pandemic. Yeah. So I think all this issue, but unfortunately we are still facing the same issues. So yep. It's like 12 years. Yeah, yeah. I made this film 12 years back, but nothing much is done. So yeah, we have to continue the struggles.
I couldn't help but wonder, you know, where all these children, quote unquote children, you know, 10, 11 years later. I was very curious, you know, I wonder where they are now, what they're doing. It'd be so nice to find out, you know, how they're doing, whether they're full-time activists now as well.
So far, some are still very active in the movement, yeah, mm-hmm. helping here and there, but not all of them are like involved as a full-time activist, yeah.
Okay, so you did keep in touch?
Yeah, we did keep in touch because a lot of them were the grassroots, it's a second generation of the grassroots organization, so right. We are somehow still in the same circle.
Okay, all right. Well, that's nice to hear. But I guess, you know, before I let you go, Sukhwa, you know, for anyone who's coming to watch this with a fresh pair of eyes, you know, someone who's not seen this film before, what do you hope they will take away from it?
I think one point that I would like to stress here is about the issues that we are bringing, because all these issues are still like quite a statement now, and not much change have been done. And all this issue is not a one good thing. I think all this issue not a KL centric one. I found nowadays all our focus are very KL centric and city centric. But it's very important also to build the support, the base, and empowerment at the rural area. So this firm, I think this journey was brought to the ground, to the rural place, to all to villages, and we actually took a lot of time to meeting people on the ground. And I think only with this ground support we can make the real change, and only with the uprising from people from the bottom can bring the real change. So we don't want, I think people are fed with elite politics where very few people decide on our life. Yeah. So let's build a mass movement that really coming from the people and bottom-up democracy. I hope they can feel it from the film itself. And also, everyone struggles, I would say. So we need to be part of the solution. Yeah.
Thanks so much for joining me today, Sukhwa. That was So Sukhwa telling us more about her film Kayuh, which will be featured on this week's Weekend Watch with Freedom Film Fest. If you'd like to catch this week's playlist, again, just head to the Freedom Film Network's YouTube page and you can watch the films there. And if you miss any part of today's interview or any previous Live and Learn interviews, you can download the podcast at bfm.my/learn or you can find it on the BFM app. This has been Live and Learn on The Bigger Picture, BFM 89.9.
Kalau gaji tak naik kita kayuh,
kayuh.
Kalau gaji tak naik kita kayuh,
kayuh.
Kalau gaji tak naik beginilah caranya. Kalau gaji tak naik kita kayuh,
kayuh.
Kalau rumah tak beri kita kayuh,
kayuh.
Kalau rumah tak beri kita kayuh,
kayuh.
Kalau rumah tak beri beginilah caranya. Kalau rumah tak beri kita kayu, kalau ayu setaman tu kita kayu, kalau ayu setaman tu.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.